Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Miles.
Yeah.
We're thrilled, a little trepidatious, to be joined in our third seat by a brilliant comedian, writer, actor, and twisted motherfucker.
Allegedly.
Whose stand-up album, the Blake album, Stuffed Boy, and Live from the Pandemic debuted at number one on iTunes and Amazon.
Hell yeah.
His album, 12 Years of Voicemails from Todd Glass to Blake Wexler, charted on Billboard. Please welcome the hilarious, the chaotic. He's riding a recumbent bike in short shorts and his plumpers are on full display. It's Blake Wexler!
Hey guys, thank you for having me. This is Blake Wexler, aka Zyder Day. That is not from Paul Garaventa. That's from me. I wrote that, and it is titled Saturday Zites All Zite for Ziting.
That's one of those songs that, like, now that I've heard it a bunch of times, it doesn't strike me as much. But the first time I heard it, I'm like, this guy's just screaming Saturday over and over again. What the fuck? What is happening?
Did you ever hear someone remix that, like, In the Air Tonight, where with the drum, where it's like, da-dun, 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 but they looped it over and over and over again for like 4 minutes, where it just never ends. Where I wonder if someone could do that with Saturday.
Just trying different emphases.
Yeah, because what is it like? Oh, wait, has someone made it? No,
the internet is
no, someone did one for 21 Pilots Saturday.
Huh. Did somebody remake the 21 Pilots one?
No, Jack, we're talking about Elton John's version.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because you know, with that one,
you're talking about like when people always do whatever for 10 hours is kind of like that like YouTube format. Just like when people do like, I know.
Well, this is a good podcast.
Uh-oh, guess what?
Yeah, baby.
Hold on. Where is it? We're 19 minutes in. 19 minutes. Yeah. Yeah.
Saturday.
An hour and 45 minutes in.
You still think he's going to come in and change it at some point, right? Like, you still hold out hope.
The best is the visuals to the video. It's a non-ending loop of just like an infinite going into Elton John's mouth zoom.
Oh my God, I'm going to throw up. Yeah.
Just 10
we
hours.
We probably can't even
10
play
hours
that.
Long that YouTube video is.
I love it.
Look, I'm just going to say.
Say it.
Up top. Mm-hmm. I was against having Blake on today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Our mm-hmm. podcast.
We were going to have Henry Kissinger on.
Yeah. And our podcast is just recovering from the last time Blake was here and referred to his legs as plumpers.
Sure.
Like
Henry and I have the same agent. Yeah. And I often get his bookings when he can't make them, which is frequently. He's not well, yeah. If you haven't noticed.
I loved your talk at Davos. It was fantastic.
I was so
really
tired.
Put things in perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great delivery.
It's like, no, it's not our fault.
You're right.
It's not our fault.
Why are they hating? Because we have money. I don't get it, guys.
Right. Oh, jealousy? Is that maybe ever heard of it? Thank mm-hmm. you. Anyways, Blake.
Yeah.
It's great to have you back.
It's great to be back.
Blake, did you see Shaq get pushed into the Christmas tree by
Oh
Penny?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about before we started recording. I said the people crave this content. Well, we need to talk about
people
it online.
Who don't know, on Inside the NBA, there was like a foot race where Kenny shoved fucking Shaq into probably a 20-foot Christmas tree.
Yeah.
And
a Shaq and a half.
They're running, yeah. They go shoulder to shoulder, Shaq goes like head first into this fucking Christmas and like vanishes into it because it's so big.
It is, and by falling into the Christmas tree instead of continuing to move in like unimpeded, that Christmas tree saved three lives. Because if he had just like gone off stage into like people working behind the scenes, they would have been crushed.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised Shaq hasn't given himself the nickname the Vociferous Coniferous yet after falling into that tree. I think there's nothing more objectively funny than a person falling into a tree, because you think it would be painful, but you do get absorbed by the pines.
Yeah, there's something about what, like someone that big like running at full, because it feels very childish, because they're mm-hmm. just racing to the other end of the studio and Kenny Smith just gives them the shoulder to shoulder here.
It is.
You just see his feet sticking out.
Yeah.
It looks like in Wizard of Oz when the house lands on her.
And yeah, just the his feet are poking just sticking out, from out the bottom. Toes up.
Oh, man.
Toes up.
Yeah, I think I would be screaming. Maybe he would have been it were we not on. Not on TV. Maybe he would have been just going, ow, 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 ow. But he held it in.
There was this guy who would hang out in the valley. His name was Christmas Tree Mike. Mm-hmm. And he got that name because he was always jumping into Christmas trees.
See, this is the thing. Like, Kiefer Sutherland did it in that one video. And it's like one of the greatest videos of just drunken madness that I've ever seen. Now Shaq mm-hmm. getting pushed into one. Like, this feels like a thing that just diving into Christmas trees might be coming. And apparently it already was with Christmas trees.
Is that like our new way of like pushing back against like creeping theocracy?
Yes.
Oh, hold on. I haven't seen the Kiefer Sutherland one in a while.
Yeah.
What is he like at a hotel lobby?
Hey, Kiefer, you a pirate, man.
That would explain everything.
Oh, just takes that fucker down.
Takes the tree down. He kind of dives. It's not a satisfying dive. He dives with his hands like straight up.
You want to like full arm and leg wrap around the trunk.
Yeah. Not to be underrated is the guy saying, Kiefer, you're a pirate, man. And Kiefer responding, that would explain everything.
Yeah.
Just before diving in.
It would.
Yeah. That would explain everything.
Mm-hmm. You ever seen him out in LA drunk?
I haven't, but I know a lot of people who have.
Yeah, that's like another LA story. People would you sort of like have is like back in the early aughts was like you'd always probably intersect with Andy Dick doing something absolutely fucking ridiculous or illegal. Yeah. And then the other one was Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
Oh, Brian came in the chat. Yep. I know, dude, if you were hanging around the fucking Cantors on Fairfax, you definitely were running into Andy Dick because that's mm-hmm. where I always saw him.
I've seen him there. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Weird as some no spots, you're like, yo, that washed up dude is there like eight times out of ten.
I guess I'm just going to get touched inappropriately while I eat a grilled cheese sandwich at 1 o'clock in the morning.
My friend got in a car with Andy Dick around the time he was like 20 years old. And he was like very much starstruck by like being like, hey, you want to go to a party with us? And he got in like this like Porsche, like with like two other dudes. And then like he like got out like immediately and we're like, oh, it became like very lecherous and predatory very quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. This is what you're missing out by not living in LA, mm-hmm. the rest of America.
Yeah.
I miss it. I miss that more than anything else. Yeah. Not the friendship.
Hey, at least you get water ice now.
I'll miss you most of all.
Yeah.
A little Wizard of Oz reference for the kids.
For the kids.
What is something from your search histories that is revealing about who you are? Catherine, you want to start us off?
Sure. I looked and I was like, what's sort of weird and illuminating here? Horse head bumper.
Horse head bumper.
Yeah. Okay. Was one. So I'm a horse mom and
that's how you like to greet them, with a little head bump?
A little head bump. Yeah. It's like a little thing that they wear on their head if they have to travel. Sense. So that if they freak out, which he does, and fling their head in the air, they don't also split their skull open. So it's like a really dorky kind of like thick leather Pope cap is kind of how it looks.
Okay. Which Pope cap? Because Pope hats can get pretty wild.
I'm thinking like the curvy one.
The curvy one. Yeah.
That is a good point.
More modest Pope hat. Yeah. Mm.
There might be some really interesting directions to take horse bumpers in the whole Pope hat.
Yeah.
Variety.
The oeuvre.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, I feel like I haven't seen the big good Pope hat in a while. The one that's just not really like any other hat that has ever been worn by anyone else. It's just the size of a large basket, like a clothing hamper, just on top of someone's head. I don't know why that's what I went with.
Holding in all that hair.
But
for some reason, this is making me wonder how the Pope feels about White Lotus. And if he's been watching this season.
Huge fan,
and
I'd imagine.
Maybe if he'll appear in the finale. These are all questions that are now coming up for me.
Yeah. There's a lot of religious art in there. Mm. So who knows? Yep. How about you, Leah? What's something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Well, one of the most recent things I searched was Mistress America trailer, which is a movie directed by Greta Gerwig. I was reading a long profile about her, and the secret to my productivity is that I don't really watch movies. I watch movie trailers. And so on any given day, I'm searching a trailer. I mean, most movie trailers give you the entire story in like 2.5 minutes and then you're done. You don't really have to watch the movie. So.
And they're so emotional. They just pack all those emotions in there.
Uh-huh. Why don't we have like best trailer awards at the Oscars?
I've asked this question many times.
A brilliant observation. Something desperately needed and not enough credit given to those trailer cutters.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Amazing. They're the unsung heroes of our time, really.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are they the same people who do like the emotional sports video stories like for the Olympics? Gosh. You know, those little like...
Oh my God.
They take you on that same emotional roller coaster in 2.5 minutes before the next like 100 meter, whatever.
Yeah. Just make you weep.
I'm such a baby for those. They make me cry every single time. I love an emotional Olympic story.
Yeah.
Micro emotional roller coasters.
Yes.
That's like a professional skill set.
Mm-hmm.
I just looked at the runtime for Avatar 2, The Way of the Water.
And
it is... Like, it is not a number that I've ever seen as a runtime before.
Does this have a 3 hours in the front of it?
But they didn't do it. It was like 190 something minutes.
Okay. Oh, wow. So 3 hours 10.
Yeah, three hours 10 minutes.
That's a long movie.
They don't want you to know. Yeah. They're like, maybe you can't do the math.
This dumb can't do math. He'll just go to the movie. But I'm excited to see that, but a little less excited. I might just watch the trailer a number of times.
I know, right? You're gonna find out the whole plot, who dies, what the romance is. I mean, you just need 2.5 minutes. There you go. Fair.
How was the Greta Gerwig trailer?
It was great. I mean, I love Greta Gerwig. I should probably actually watch the movie. Like, that is something that I should maybe give time to. But you know what I did give time to was the extremely long profile about her. So I have time to read. I just don't always have time to watch, 2-hour movies.
I mean, God bless. You are far more enriched for it, for giving time to reading more than watching. Like, props to you on that one.
Right. Gold star.
Gold star.
I'm like the last person in America who still reads, it appears. So,
so this is not the Barbie movie that we've been covering.
No, but it was about the Barbie movie. And did you see those stills? They were amazing. Oh my God.
I mean, the stills have been incredible. But Greta Gerwig has another more serious film dropping before that.
No, it's actually old. I mean, why would you think I'm up to speed on culture here? No, this is from years ago.
Mistress America is old.
It's old, yeah. Just to be clear. Okay. I'm not watching current trailers, okay? I'm not that hip.
Cutting edge, watching current trailers.
Watching trailers from 7 years ago. That is what I do with my time, yes.
Okay, cool. What is something you think is overrated?
Voice memos. I don't know if the, like, for me, like, voice memos feel really overrated. Like, unless it's just like a sweet, like, hey, think of you, or just gonna like say something stupid and fun. If we're having a whole conversation over voice memos, it's freaking hard to keep track for me. Mm. Yeah, and then I can't go back and reference. Yeah, just call me. Like, I'm like, either text me or just call me. Like, I want one or the other, but now, this like weird in between.
Is this happen when I have voice memos? It used to happen in two ways. On iMessage, like on your phone, when people send voice notes, that's usually how drug dealers talk to each other. So there's no real text. You just send these ethereal voice notes to, you know,
it disappear
to coordinate things.
Yes.
And then, but then I also have a version where like I talk to people that live abroad on WhatsApp. And all of that is straight voice memo conversations from people, especially like I know a lot, like there are people I talk to in like Costa Rica or like Africa and stuff. And they just hit you with a 2.5-minute voice memo. And I'm like,
and, yeah. And it's like it's like, for example, for us, like being like Mexican and then having a lot of Latin American friends. And like also like my French sister was like, here's a 3 different voice memos back to back, which are each like 3-minute long things.
Right.
And I'm just like, oh my God, like I love it. And I'm glad that WhatsApp, at least I can like go back and listen to it. But like, there's still no mode to like fast forward.
Yeah, like scrub to the
Yeah. And I'm like, so if I've listened and then I had to pause and then it closes for some reason. Yeah. And with iMessage, it's like the moment you pause it, it starts back from the beginning.
Right.
Ooh.
So then
there's
like,
a little podcast I made for you.
Yeah.
But I get it too. Like, it is hard because when you're abroad, right, the time zones, you don't know if you're going to actually call each other on the phone. So I understand the impulse to be like, let me send you my voice and then you send your voice back. So then it kind of feels like we're just connecting a little bit deeper than text. But like, when I got married, I had a cousin send me, no joke, a 7-minute voice message about my wedding. And I was like, this is a lot to listen
to. See, like, and that, I'm like, that's both really sweet and endearing, and I'm glad you have it now. But then I'm also like, I've gotten 12-minute ones before.
Yeah. That's-
and I'm like, I love it. I really do. But when I have, then also what's ridiculous is when you go back and forth and you're like, we're clearly in this chat at the same time.
Right.
We're clearly here together.
Yeah. Let's use the terrible phone function on it instead.
Yeah.
Is the phone function terrible on like what's
that? That's like a bit of a delay.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah. It's also bad when like if you send a voice memo or if you're getting a voice memo and it transcribes for you. And they've gotten good at transcribing, so like they're getting the words right. But like I've never felt stupider than like seeing my words transcribed because there's pauses, there's like and just like, what is happening? This, I would rather have just texted this straight, had the delete function than, there's always a chance you'll be transcribed, and that's not good for anyone, usually, unless you speak in complete sentences like some sort of freak. Gabe, what's something you think is underrated?
I've been thinking about this a lot because I've been trying to like give myself a nice routine in life. And if I'm thriving, if I'm like firing at all cylinders, I'm eating fruit every day. And we're not talking about fruit enough.
Yeah. Okay.
Fresh fruit. Give me some fruit, man. All like the time.
What? Fire them off. Rattle them off. What do you
think? I'm having bananas. I'm having blueberries today. Okay. I just had some pineapple. And I'm crushing it here. I don't care. Yeah. All seasons. Who cares?
Wow.
Give me more fruit. Feeling good.
Yeah.
Pineapple, peak pineapple, when it's like at its most ripe, is my favorite fruit, I think.
It's a, I don't even, can we call that fruit?
It's, yeah, it's so delicious. It's so fucking good, sweet.
I'm like, there's no fucking way. This is like that we can call this a like a healthy thing to eat, because like I'm starting to see like streaks of light in my like line of vision from how sweet it is.
Also my favorite like fake flavor, like I think they've mostly nailed pineapple in like gum and shit like that, like that it generally is fruit. I guess there's not a lot of like pineapple candy, but the I do
not in the US to,
I do tend to enjoy a lot of pineapple gum and pineapple flavored things. Blueberries year round, they're never that bad. I agree. We've been talking a lot about apples on this podcast, but I think we should spend some time on bananas. Bananas are fucking delicious. And just,
I don't like them.
You don't like bananas?
No, I mean, we've talked about it. Make my throat itch.
Oh yeah, that's right. You have.
You might
allergy.
Be allergic.
Yeah. That's all.
That's right. Justin's allergic too.
Yeah. But I eat, but I have the same thing with avocados. It's like those high potassium foods. Mm. They like trigger little things in my throat or like my lip. But avocados, I fucking fight. I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
Those of us who can enjoy them, bananas are a real blessing. Real, real mitzvah.
Yeah.
I feel like
They make me think of Tiger Woods because it's like a thing he'll eat right before he like wins a golf tournament.
Yeah.
Like, what's he doing? He's like walking to the last hole and he's just like pounding a banana. I'm like, oh, I guess that's what you're supposed to eat.
Yeah. I bring it for my kids anytime I need to like give them a snack. It's like the easiest thing. Like it's so good. They're a fruit that is creamy. Like there's not, are there other fruits that are creamy? But like if you're like doing a smoothie, like there's such a good base that adds. It's like, would you put like ice cream in this? Nope. Mm, just bananas. Right. It's I guess guava is a good creamy replacement, according to super producer Justin. Mm. But
and I heard people like the organic people, the people who like are worried about their food, which we just talked a lot about Taco Bell. I can't imagine that's any of us. But like the skin is super thick, so like it's not one of those food. Like when you eat an apple, like the skin has just been like rolling around in a truck for 4 years,
right?
But like a banana is like protected, so it's a pretty safe even for like the. I mean, I get the organic. I spend the extra 20 cents, but.
Yeah, it's like an armadillo. It's got a thick skin on it. You know, there's nothing getting through there. I am very suspicious of the amount of like really glossy apple skins that I've consumed, like that look like they were buffed out with like car wax. It's like, come on, they shouldn't look that good.
Yeah, but every day of the year they look the same. It's like something's wrong. There used to be food used to go bad and it was okay.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back to talk about some of the things that are happening elsewhere in the world.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
And we're back. And the Georgia runoff is in full swing as of this recording. And it's the big headline that we're seeing everywhere is that, like, the record-breaking vote turnout, right? Yeah. Early vote turnout. And, you know, just from people who are standing in the lines, like, it seems like a remarkably and by design inefficient voting system.
Oh, yeah.
Just a lot of people voting, but it seems like they're voting in response to the voter suppression that that people were trying to enact.
Yeah. So, like, after Trump was screaming about how the 2020 election was rigged, a lot of state legislatures, like, just cooked up some wacky voter suppression bills to be like, and that's how we're going to protect, like, using the voter integrity wave to just bring in all this new voter suppression. Well, that bill in Georgia shortened the period between the general election and a runoff. So while also restricting the ability to register new voters in that period, and a lot of it seems to be like helping Democrats inadvertently, I think, because the shortened time has led to a lot of people just turning out in droves because of, like, just generally the condensed time frame. And previous elections, Democrats, they struggled in runoffs to motivate voters to return to the polls. But again, this shortened period seems to have enabled, like, Warnock's campaign to sort of continue the momentum from November, while the Republicans were just trying to sue their way out of this and being like, can we not actually have early voting the weekend before or, like, right after Thanksgiving, have it start then? That would be bad. And then the judge was like, no, sorry, that doesn't make any legal sense. So the early voting, you know, will commence then. And since then, we're just seeing, like, Republicans slowly start to be like, maybe this one isn't that winnable. But it's also worth mentioning the whole runoff system in Georgia was put in place, you know, originally to dilute the voting power of Black voters in the state, because the idea being that working class Black voters in places like Fulton County, they wouldn't necessarily be able to go to vote again on a Tuesday, like, since they have their own obligations. And so even despite all of that, you're seeing a lot of this turnout. Who knows where it's, you know, where it could lead. I mean, the poll said that Warnock had a slim lead, but, you know, we believe things when we see them in this day and age. And while all this is happening, like, the Republicans are kind of retreating, like, barely anyone was campaigning for him, and he's hardly done any real campaigning himself. And the email for the election night gathering was described as an election night party, when typically a confident campaign would call it a victory celebration. They're like, join us for the victory celebration. They said they might as well have been like, yeah, we're going to have the game on Tuesday if you want to stop by. It was sort of like the energy from that email. So, you know, and while all, and then again, on top of this, we have grifting. Like, Trump and Senator Mike Lee in Utah and other Republicans are just using this runoff to fill their own coffers. They're sending emails talking about, like, help us. It, like, Mike Lee sent one that said, quote, Warnock has been drastically outraising Herschel Walker, and we have to pick up the pace. Please rush a generous contribution to help finish the job and pull off a huge win for Herschel. The thing is,
finish the job.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Take him out back, because this man is, he doesn't even know what office he's running for half the time. Senator Mike Lee, if you look at the fine print, he was keeping 50% of what was donated for himself. And then Trump was also doing this. This dude was keeping 90% of what was donated for himself, and the other 10% would go to Herschel Walker. And then even worse, and then when people were like, yo, 90%, he slowly went down to like a 50-50 split after getting called out. Then the NRSC, the National Republican Senatorial Campaign, these are the people who are in charge of, like, the Senate races for the Republican Party. They were keeping 99 cents of every dollar donated.
That's
so it's just like, it's wild to see the levels of just like all kinds, like just how race is playing out in so many ways. Like the runoff itself is like a relic of like a tool of white supremacy. The Republicans thinking that like black candidates are interchangeable to voters. Wow. Like, okay. The new, like the lack of nuance or just the ignorance there. And then like the extraction of capital, like off the back of his campaign to benefit mostly white Republicans. It's like, it has it all, folks. This has it all. So we'll see. But I mean, the Democrats already have their majority either way, but it's something else to look at.
Wow. 99 cents of every dollar. That's wild. That whole apparatus, like all the fundraising that Trump was doing in the aftermath of the last election and like not doing anything with that money, like mm-hmm. just building up his own personal quote unquote war chest is, it feels like something people are like, that's crazy. And then we just kind of moved on from. But
yeah,
it's straight up grifting the people that he's relying on to come out and vote for him.
Bodes well for 2024, I must say. Is the Republican right. Party just going to crash and burn in a pile of grift?
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like it, because like already there's infighting because Marjorie Taylor Greene denounced Nick Fuentes. So now like the super far right that even had her back is now like, oh, she's a chump. Like,
right.
You know, like getting mad at her. You're like, yo, you can't make this whole group of people happy. Like, yeah, like it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think that's why it's interesting to also see DeSantis's whole like strategy in 2024, which his whole thing is like he's trying to say as little as possible and trying to let Trump do as much damage to himself before they start like trading shots. And that's really the one I'm really willing to see if Trump is able to just bully everyone into being like, OK, fine, you're the fucking nominee, like, you know, or if they're going to try and find a different strategy. But I don't know. The one thing with the Republicans is they're not very elastic.
No.
They're thinking.
Well, they are when it comes to white supremacy and letting,
right,
you know,
right.
far-right yeah, yeah. white supremacists and Nazis into the party. They will stretch the shit out of the tent in that direction.
They can bend that way. Sure, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yes. But that's one thing they can do. That's one thing they do well that the Democrats don't do, is they can make people in their party fall into line around yeah, right. the points. And the Democrats are allergic to that.
The Democrats, yeah. I feel like, aren't aligned with what the people who end up voting for them actually want. Whereas the Republicans, they're like, yeah, 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 we just don't say that shit out loud. But we actually want the thing that you're voting for and that like you want. Like ultimately they're aligned with their base, and the Democrats have to like remain, I don't know if it's even have to or want to, but they're ultimately beholden to, you know, corporations. And so you can't even really compare the two parties, because the Democrats are like a corporate machine that is just doing the bidding of like unseen, unspeaking, like ultimately the most powerful people in the party. And they have this base that they have to like pretend like they're doing the bidding of. Whereas the Republicans, I think, have the advantage of at least the courage of their convictions, which are, you know, being white supremacists.
Exploiting like white grievance politics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that is like a thing. They're like, yo, look, we all get it, right? We're mad about right. this. Okay. We can move forward. Where, yeah. It's hard for Democrats to be like, we get it. Working people need support, and we need to stand by the unions in order to fight their employers for a better wage. And cut to that rail worker. Yeah. Fucking
unless they threaten the line go up. You know, ultimately they care about the line go up.
I wonder if like eventually they're like, look, y'all, we'll try and get you health care if you can figure out a way for y'all to have health care and make line go up.
Right.
If you can do that, then sure, like we're all ears, but everything y'all are talking about means line goes down for people we fuck with. And that's, you know, this can't happen, baby.
All right. Well, speaking of systemic problems,
yeah,
want to kind of continue talking to you, Cerise, about just, you know, you've been reporting for years now of just this systemic problem of unaccountable police violence in Los Angeles. And the similarity of the stories is shocking. Like each one is this cataclysmic failure of human rights and of
just, you know, any sort of anything that anyone would think of as a civilized family. Like, it's just, but over and over again, you know, the police or the sheriffs shoot or maim someone many times in front of their family. The person in question is often, you know, having a mental health crisis or doing some nonviolent offense like dealing marijuana. There's also, you know, an epidemic that you highlight of like brutal beating of people in prison, like to death or near death while handcuffed. And if the person isn't immediately killed, they often leave them to die with no medical attention, oftentimes, again, in front of their loved ones. And then the officers make up a lie, not like many times, not even really attempting to make it believable. Like they'll plant a gun that doesn't even match their
or not even
report. Yeah. Or they won't. It'll
there
be
was a quote, gun.
Ghost gun. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they'll be like, yeah, it was a black gun. And then the gun they plant is a chrome gun. And they're just like, oh, yeah, you got us. Because the lie, they don't even have to like do a meticulous job of lying, because when they get caught, they just get sued for millions of dollars that comes from taxpayers. Like taxpayers pay for their fuck ups. And then, you know, it's not only is it not addressed at a systemic level, the officers in question are either like left to continue doing the same job and like oftentimes kill other people, or made to retire and collect like huge pensions, again, paid for by taxpayers. And it's just, I don't know, it's really startling to, you know, read it in your original piece and hear it, you know, in your reporting in the podcast, just like laid out side by side, that like there's just nothing being done over and over and over again. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, like we're also seeing, like, how do you think you've done so much amazing, like detailed reporting about Los Angeles. Do you hear from people in other parts of the country saying that they see similar things happening where they are?
Oh, yes. Overwhelmingly so. I've heard from people in, I want to say, 20 different states that have either been victims of what they believe to be police gang violence, or even I've heard from police officers that reach out to me and say, I am really concerned about what I think is a gang within my department.
Right. Yeah.
Is it like just operating pretty much in like the exact same way? Like, yes. they have like there's semiotics, there's symbolism, they have tattoos or whatever names. It's not just sort of like, oh, that station is kind of out of control. Like they have a like identity as well.
They do. Yeah, they're doing activities that meet, well, what we have in the California Penal Code as the standard of a gang, which is three or more people. They have a common name or unifying symbol or hand gesture. They are committing criminal offenses, and they are doing that in order to further the reputation of the gang.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like, I feel like it's just like any social setting, like that people get in groups or whatever. And in this case, when you have people who are armed and can just kill with impunity, like that almost that this gang thing is probably, it's safe to believe that it more than not, it's probably existing in someone's city.
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely corruption happening in your city. That's right. Not unique to the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. The, you know, the tactics that are used by the LASD, I've seen repeated across the country, and there are lots of, you know, stories by other journalists that break down these tactics that completely mirror what we're seeing in Los Angeles. What's happening in the LA County Sheriff's Department with deputy gangs, it's probably the most well-known gang issue, but it certainly isn't the only one.
Yeah, it really, the just lack of accountability and the, like, they feel like drunk on power. Sometimes they're just drunk, but just doing whatever the fuck they want. It feels like a fraternity, or, you know, like at like some Ivy League school full of like rich kids who've just never seen a consequence in their life, because there's just this institutional knowledge that they can get away with fucking anything they want. And the only thing that they seem motivated by is not keeping anyone safe, but insisting on their own right to basically kill people at will. Like that seems the thing that seems to really motivate them is when that is threatened, when that's questioned. They really seem to get that. That's when they like come together and do a lot of damage. Is anytime they feel like somebody's going to criticize them or make it so that systemic advantage is not there for them.
Right. Exactly.
There's a quote, I think, in the Jump Out Boys episode where their like booklet, their little like gang book, defines them as alpha dogs who think and act like the wolf but never become the wolf, which I don't know if it's like an overt reference or if it's just heavily influenced by the teachings of David Grossman, who we've talked about on this show.
Right.
But he's this former Army Ranger who goes around like teaching cops to think about the places they police as enemy territory. And
that's like warrior mentality, right?
Yeah, warrior mentality. His quote unquote science is called killology. And he's basically,
oh my God.
Yeah, he calls himself America's top police trainer. And that sounds like he's like bragging, but he teaches, you know, countless police forces to basically kill at a moment's notice and not feel guilty about it. And it's just straight up like, I mean, his background's military and he's, you know, giving police forces this Marine training, this, you know, like just systemizing of like killing and violence. And like that, it's a nationwide kind of program that he's gotten rich by just like putting out there. And the thing he always talks about is like, you got to have the wolf mentality and like, because there's wolves and we're sheepdogs, but we have to be able to think. It gets very complicated and like you need a fucking flow chart to like know who's the sheepdog and who's the wolf and when you're acting like a wolf, but you're a sheep in wolf's clothing and all this shit. But ultimately his belief, like for instance, with the Black Lives Matter protests, his stated belief is that they need to be more prepared to use force because of the Black Lives Matter protests, because you know, he was a big spreader of the lie that like the Black Lives Matter protesters were trying to kill cops, which, you know, comes up in your show that like that's just a thing that they really want to fucking believe and have no support for, that like the, when people are protesting them, that they're actually trying to harm them.
Yeah.
What's the mentality like, Cerise? Like, because there we've seen clips where, you know, like people interview cops, like John Bernthal on his podcast, he asked like this other cop, he's like, where do you think all this police reform stuff's coming from, man? Like, where do you think that was, what's
that is a
dead
on impersonation.
That's literally what he fucking said in this thing. We're like, yo, what, sir? How, like, you know, like with the added scrutiny with like reporting like yours and things like that, is there even awareness within the departments like that they're like, hey, maybe we need to tone it down? Or are they completely like on some like self-righteous shit where they're like, nah, like these people are tripping. These people are tripping.
Most police officers that I speak to are very in favor of reform, of oversight. A few of them even say that they need less money in the department. That's another sentiment I hear a lot. Jeez. They won't use the words defund the police, but they will say we do not need a budget.
We don't need more money.
they say we don't need more. We do not need more money. And we certainly don't need all the money that we're getting. And that's police officers that I speak to across the political spectrum, Democrats, Republicans, they all, for the most part, agree that, yeah, there is a huge issue going on. We do need more accountability. We need more oversight that is not coming from inside the sheriff's department. It needs to be an outside third party. And yes, we could do with less money, and we should do with less money.
Yeah.
It's almost unbelievable.
It is.
Some of them like even say we should get rid of the department. And that's coming from both sides of the political spectrum as well.
Is that because they're saying, like, I'm not sure what good we're doing anymore? Or
exactly. Like,
They think
that they're doing more harm than good. And they think that the department is so far gone that it can't be saved.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the police that you interview are former police officers.
Right.
They have this experience up close with like detailed, you know, just seeing the corruption, encountering like what happens when someone tries to address the corruption. And yeah, that like it's understandable that they're like, I don't know, this is hopeless.
Yeah. How do you feel with Robert Luna coming in terms of, you know, like his potential to, you know, obviously be somewhat better than Villanueva?
Yeah, the bar is really on the floor there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Robert Luna would have to do a lot of really, truly awful shit to get on really anyone's bad side at this point. Yeah, I'm hopeful that, you know, we can see a return to normalcy in the sheriff's department. We've already seen that. I mean, I don't think there would be a chance in hell in the prior 4 years for me to interview Sheriff Alex Villanueva, but I was able to interview now Sheriff Luna, which,
yeah,
you know, Sheriff Villanueva like bounced me out of his press conferences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's pretty positive.
right. He's willing to speak. So yeah, in that sense, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we'll see what happens. I don't think that, you know, he single-handedly can eliminate the deputy gang issue in 4 years. I mean, it's a 50-year problem and he's one man. And I think that he understands that it's a deeply entrenched issue that's going to take, you know, some serious overhaul. And I'm excited to see, you know, what the Luna administration is going to look like and what it means to have Robert Luna as the sheriff of Los Angeles County.
Yeah. Villanueva came to power on like as a quote unquote progressive Democrat, but he like your podcast like really exposes that like he was connected already to like Kevin De Leon and like some of these people who have now been outed as white supremacists. So it's this deeply entrenched, you know, problem. So that was like, I guess, something that was making me feel less hopeful about Luna is like, well, Villanueva came in and was claiming that he was going to reform things and he was like worse and like created more of a problem. And so what's to be different about this guy? And it does seem like there's a difference because of your reporting and because of, you know, some of the systemic white supremacy that's being exposed just throughout the political machine in Los Angeles.
Hopefully. And much more to be exposed, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about that AI selfie art app that everyone's buying.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, deputy opinion editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
And we're back. And let's talk about your podcast, Maria. Let's talk about When You're Invisible.
Yeah.
Because your first episode dropped last week, I think.
It did. And episode two just dropped today.
Yeah.
Or yesterday.
So in your first episode, you interview someone named Ralph who works at an Ivy League package center. And it's Columbia University. You went to Columbia. That's how you kind of met him. And he talks about growing up in Washington Heights and then like coming to this Ivy League campus with its like beautifully manicured lawns and old buildings. And I think he said something like, why didn't I even know that this existed? Like,
yeah.
Where was this? But you specifically use the phrase working class in the intro to When You're Invisible. And, you know, like I mentioned up top, America has this pervasive myth that class doesn't exist because you're always just like one break away from being a millionaire. And I think an idea that your first couple episodes get at is that, you know, that is not true. And also, like, when you are in the working class, a lot of times people treat you as if you're invisible. And like some of the behaviors that they describe, I think it was the guest of the second episode was talking about like a girl not getting the package she wanted, a student at Columbia not getting the package she wanted as quickly as possible, and just laying on the ground, plugging her ears and like screaming at the top of her lungs until just being like, la, 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 la.
Yeah. No, their stories are insane. Like even one that we didn't get to include for Ralph was like, he was like, there's these turnstiles to get into the building from the street where the package center is. And it's the big turnstiles, like the full body bar one.
Yeah.
And apparently there was a student who started going in the opposite direction and the bars weren't moving because there's only one that like you push and you go through the open hole, but the other side is just bar. So she like gets to the bars, is noticing it's not moving, starts sticking her arms through it to try and see if she can like somehow finagle getting in.
Wait, and you're talking about the fixed side of a rotating door where the metal bars go underneath the other metal bars?
Yes, like, exactly.
Oh, she thought, okay, go on.
And he's like watching her and he goes, excuse me, other side. And she like, but he was like, she full on committed, like had gotten like one full arm, like trying to get through.
Yeah.
That sounds like me when I'm too high though, to be fair. Like you know, just like coming to a thing, being laser focused on like, okay, there must be some truth to this.
I think it's like that laser focus, that commitment that like, and Ralph even says that. He's like, you know, she might just cure cancer with that level of energy. It just like didn't translate into like everyday things.
Right.
Yeah.
Or just like, the little things in which like they would often say, it's like they'd often get a student who would be like, what, like, do you not know who I am? Do you not know who my parents are? Right. Rather than just being like, what's the logical thing that's happening right now?
Yeah.
And like, are there people really actually trying to make my day harder versus being like, do you know how many packages we get and how we have to do this legally because to tamper with someone else's mail?
Yeah, right.
Right.
Is actually like punishable in our law.
Yeah.
So all of these like different factors, and also just because like honestly they made like the package center home for so many of us, and like a lot of us didn't know about each other, like the students that actually like felt really connected to this group of people. And like the more I talked to Ralph and Louie, they would always be like, oh yeah, this person stopped by, and I was like, ah, there's other people. One that's awesome, but also like crazy that it's not really a known or commonplace thing of like, oh, we all just hang out together. Like if you work here, if you go here, we all hang out. And that there isn't this like marked difference that came into play. And I think
for me, like, there were a lot of great students there. Like, don't get me wrong, professors, students, there were a lot of incredible people. But you are met with a lot of different kinds of people and people where you're like, oh, doing your own stuff or doing things that, like, even like, there's so, I'm trying to like think of specific examples. Like, for example, like laundry for a kid, for kids, like a lot of them would outsource it, either right. have someone who their family hired or they would get a service to do that. A lot of people who had tutors even throughout college, where it's like, yeah, this person helps me perfect right. my papers. And you're just like, what?
My papers.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And you'd be like, oh, and you're already so brilliant in my brain. Like, there was a wow. level of just like understanding and how the world worked. And also, I met people firsthand where they were like upfront and ruthless about like, I want to make money. And that is the only thing I want to do in life.
Yeah.
And like the way they related to other people was actually very much through that lens only. And that was very different than when I'd come from. So for me, experiencing that wide range of humanity was fascinating. And then to hear it firsthand from people who were workers at that school, like, was really interesting. And especially because they are really great people. They are really wonderful.
Yeah. He talks about how he like wasn't being paid overtime, but he stayed up and like did overnights at the package center because it was at a time when like the books were being distributed. And like he was like, well, these students need their books. And just like he has this, in addition to just sounding like the most fun person, he's like, yeah, if you're around me, like you're going to have fun. I can't help it. Like that's just what's going to happen. But also just like so firmly aware of the social contract that yeah. we're all supposed to uphold to like one another. And mm-hmm. he holds himself to a high standard when it comes to helping people. And mm-hmm. that was another place where, you know, I went to school around a lot of people who like went right into finance and, you know, some good, really nice, good people who went into finance. And then a lot of like shitty people who went right into finance. But like, just more and more we're seeing with those kind of higher ruling classes, like the more Panama Papers leak, the more we learn that they're not holding themselves to like any environmental standards when, you know, the right. energy companies have known, the oil companies have known about climate change since before anyone. Like they're not holding themselves to a standard that upholds the social contract to not just egregiously violate other people's human rights. Like that felt like it was like really on display in a powerful way in your show.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is partially why I wanted this show to exist, is just some of the people who uphold that contract the most are people who are like, to me, like working class folks or folks who are struggling, because like it's very community based. And also it's a practice of every day. And I think like sometimes as you climb the ladder, like there's this like, I don't have to uphold it today. Or like if I don't do what this person is asking me to do, like then I lose everything I've been trying to build. And yeah. you're like, but how much are you actually losing versus the idea in your head of what you're losing? And then you become... Then you allow that to continue slipping. And then there's also people who are just like straight up villainous in this world.
Yeah.
And I think to me too, with seeing how like those levels operate sometimes, I just want to continue connecting people to each other and being like, you're actually not that different. Or you are very different, but you can maintain love and compassion. And also like, heck yeah, I have your back. Like, yeah. I want to have your back. And guess what? Actually, if we do understand each other better, if we do connect, we can be against all odds and change something. We're seeing it, like, to me, we're seeing it with the rise of unions again.
Right.
And
yeah.
And the labor movement and like being able to connect back to that and being like, yeah, like we can like believe in the best of people, especially like people who are actually like proving themselves to be working towards that on an everyday basis.
Right. I do think it's underrated how thoroughly
the culture, what, as you said, as you like climb the ladder, the more you see a culture that is just completely divorced from any consideration of the social contract. Like, I think that's something people will be, continue to be shocked by. Like, you see it with the Panama Papers and things like that. But, you know, that I'm so glad your podcast exists to kind of have that come out, more and more as you interview some of these voices.
Yeah.
Aren't heard. Where, so the first two episodes were kind of take place inside the package center. Where are you taking it from here?
So actually, what's actually going to be really interesting in conversation to this conversation to see is my third episode is specifically talking to someone who has worked in household staffing for the wealthy of New York City.
Yeah.
And so there's some really crazy stories in it. Yeah. And also the complicated conversation of like my podcast is a short on the shorter side right now. And eventually, we'll love to continue it to make it like hour long further, because like it's such an interesting conversation to be like, there are people who walk into these homes and don't have any protection whatsoever. Right. And depending on your class, your immigration status, your education, all of these things like factor into how you're treated at times. And that, yeah, there are really good people out there. There are for sure. But like what's really complicated is like when you start to see the grays of, and then the really dark parts of it where you're like, it doesn't matter that there are good people if someone can be treated this way when they walk into a home and on the day to day where like they're not being treated well, let alone paid well, or anything like that, like,
right.
What are we doing? So there's that, but then also being like, there's a lot of an interesting sense of like entitlement that can happen even to good people or decent people where it's like, because I've earned this, I deserve to be automatically like treated a certain way or like get all the perks of what I want versus being like, no, if I'm contracting you even for like domestic work, this is a partnership. This is an employee-employer thing, and it has to be laid out. And if there's like unsaid or like changing boundaries, like that's not okay. And I think sometimes people in positions of more power in those situations don't always see the full range of like, oh, wait, let me think about what this means.
For
this person's life. So we talk about that. And then I also talked to undocumented Ground Zero cleanup crew workers and their experience, along with like what they like look forward to in life and how they like think about this country. And then I also talked to like a woman who stutters. So like the podcast is mostly centered around working people, but it is also like taking in like to consideration people who have been othered in society, no matter what that looks like. And so I talked to this woman who stutters, and 1% of the population globally stutters. And there's actually no difference among different ethnicities or races. It's actually within gender. And so it's very rare to be a woman who stutters. And so I talked to her about what it's like to be perceived as stupid or like someone who doesn't like deserve the time of day to have a full conversation with or get to know. And so, and what that's like growing up even and having that experience. So we like do a whole variety. And then like my brother also married into a white working class family. And so I sit down with my sister-in-law's sister, who I like knew very little about, and was like, hey, can I talk to you about your life? Because my perception of your group of people is very different. And your perception of my group of people might actually be very different as well. So like a Mexican and a white working class, like very much a la New York Times.
Yeah. I got to speak for the New York Times.
Yeah, right. I know. Let them know. Be like, guess what?
The conversation is earth shattering. Subheading for that New York Times piece. What's the reaction to people? Because, you also mentioned a lot of these people, these workers, it's like the first time anyone's bothered to interview them.
Yes.
That anyone has bothered to say, no, the story is about you. The story is about your lived experience. You don't have to like sugarcoat anything. We want to talk very, honestly about your life. What's the reaction from people like when you ask them to do that or on the other side of an interview, like what kind of, what's the sensation for everybody involved?
It's there's a lot of different perspectives or like feelings involved. Like my sister-in-law's sister was like, no, don't interview me. Like I have nothing. I'm not interesting. Like I have no interesting stories. And yet you hear her life stories and you're like, what the heck? You are fascinating, incredible.
Right.
And then like even Ralph was like, I mean, I'll do it for you because you're asking me. But like, you know, like it's totally chill. And then he actually was listening to his episode and was told me, he was like, I had to stop. And I want to finish the episode, but it's taking me a while. And I was like, you don't have to, but like, also, can I ask why? And he's like, I just never really saw myself from the outside because no one's been interested in this way. And I'm like, I can see how this is a good guy, but like, I also feel so strange to be in this position of like, wow, I can admire myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some things that come up throughout the first couple episodes that feel like almost internalized invisibility.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all
like,
that's being reflected back to, you know, workers, especially people of color, is like, yeah. More on that. Like,
right.
You know,
exactly.
And very hard to like break out of that to even embrace the fact that you are worthy or that, like, you know, like to like Ralph's point is like, I've never even given myself the grace to put like observe myself and understand that I'm a good person. And even despite the terrible inequality, like it's the people that are on the other side of the scale that are working the hardest to uphold some semblance of fairness. And I think that's like,
right,
fucking wild.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's like so like, my heart always fills and like makes me want to do this work more and also wants me, like, I just want more stories like this to be out there because I'm like, yeah, the way he upholds fairness and kindness and respect in his own life is much more than most people give him and more than he's given himself sometimes.
Yeah.
And even just being like, you talk about, like, we mentioned how he's like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know this existed. I remember when I was like, oh, you like art. You need to go to the Met. Like, it's free for New Yorkers. Like, go to the Met. Take your family to the Met. And he's like, okay, sure. He goes to the Met. He's like, it's gorgeous. Like, what the heck? It's amazing. And I was like, why didn't you go before? And he's like, I didn't think it was meant for me.
Yeah.
Right.
And just like that level of like, here's a man who is interested in art, but because of the background he comes from, feels like he's not allowed to enjoy it in the same way. Or like, it's not as common to hear like, hey, you know, it is free for New Yorkers. So like, go check it out if you can. And like, just kind of working through that with them, or even hearing about like Louis being really conservative about his hopes and dreams of like, yeah, you know, I'm working on my real estate license. And just being like, sometimes also working class people, they feel like, I think, like dreaming is not necessarily something they can do or should do.
Yeah.
And yet, like, they deserve, in my brain. Like, I'm like, everyone deserves to dream.
Yeah. You come from such an interesting background. On like, your mom worked as a domestic worker and like paid under the table, and like, she did that to get your dad to a position where he could be a professor.
Yeah.
And it's kind of really incredible, and to have seen that and grown up with that. Like, I grew up going to people's houses and doing my homework while my mom cooked and cleaned and organized. And like, I grew up bartering for all the things I did.
Right.
In my activities and stuff like that, until like we got more comfortable. And even then, like, because we do have family in Mexico, and unfortunately the economic situation in Mexico has never been amazing, like, my family has always sent money back. So when we got comfortable, we had people still relying on us. So the way I've gotten to see it is very different.
And then, but still getting to grow up around like education being important. It was my parents' way out. Like my mom backed my dad for his education to right. try and ensure a better life for their family. Mm. And so like being aware of that too, and understanding what a privilege that is. And then also getting to hang out with all different kinds of people. Like I hung out with my dad's grad students. I hung out with like workers my mom knew. I hung out with like the restaurant workers in the Twin Cities. Like I hung out with like a bunch of different people because I also do and did theater and opera. Like, so I was like a strange little child who was running around in different communities and was very like grateful to both be like accepted and not accepted in any of them.
Yeah.
So being in that like weird in-between space, I think allowed me a lot of like access to worlds and feelings and perceptions and cueing into what was going on in different ways. And then also we moved a lot. So like experiencing that in upstate New York, the Twin Cities, then New York City, and then now getting to experience what it's like to be in the South have all been like really, really incredible and very shaping, and also reminds me of like how much stereotypes we have out there. And some of them are like fun, whatever, you know, like I'll right. even say it, like I'm super Mexican. Like I freaking have four kinds of tajin in my house at all times. Like right. I do carry hot sauce in my bag. Like,
there you go.
Like I know that I can be a walking stereotype in that way, but like how much of it is wrong? Like
how much Lucas were you eating as a kid?
So much.
Okay. All right.
It was my favorite. It's still my favorite thing ever. Like okay, literally okay, make it when I went to go see Wakanda Forever, I had like the, you know, there's like, I had Lucas and then I also had like, there's like now a whole bunch of assortments of it. So I had like cucumber covered tajin gummies.
Whoa. Mm.
So it's like, that's my preferred thing.
Okay. Snack. Yeah.
So it's like, for sure. Like, yeah. But also like, you know, being in the South and being like, damn, there's some really cool people here. And then there's some people who are like, just like in desperate situations and desperately ignored.
Right.
Right.
It seems like the one universal thing.
Yeah.
You know, like no matter where we go, like that's one constant is that there are a lot of people who are trying to uphold this sense of fairness in a system that has absolutely discarded them.
Yeah.
And that's like the kind of really beautiful, cruel irony of a lot of like these, like hearing from these people too. And there are two points, like two things that I thought were like straight wisdom from that first episode. One was when Ralph was saying, he doesn't understand why people, like, if you're going to toil, like, why spend your whole week just looking forward to these 2 days where you aren't putting yourself through something, when if there is a way to make it work for yourself or try and enjoy yourself, then try that, or at least pursue something like that. And then, which was like wild too, because I've been in many jobs too, where I'm like, man, just get to fucking Friday, please.
Right.
I want to do this. And that was also like some of the hardest shit, like in my life in terms of like just being so deeply unsatisfied. And then the other was also, I think, your grandfather telling your father that take a job that stimulates your mind, that you use your mind and not just your hands and things like that. And I think that's such a, like, it's like, those are like those little things you grow up hearing as a child that set you on a path. And I think when I heard that, I was like, wow, that's such a great thing to be saying to somebody, like when they're young or looking to what direction they want to move in.
Right. Yeah. And that when I found that out from my father, I learned it young too, like from him. And I like knew like it was a big thing because I've grown up with my grandfather's story. Like he was put in an orphanage at a young age, like didn't get to finish grade school. Like he was taken out at fourth grade and like ended up working a lot of manual labor jobs, but also tried to make a lot of businesses work. Like he was a milkman, he worked on a farm, he even like did some illegal running across the barters. Like he was trying desperately to like figure things out, and was also a man who always loved information. Like he taught himself English and would read sci-fi books in English, even though he never finished past the fourth grade. Like, to me, it was like really moving to hear those stories and then to like also connect that to like, yeah, like my grandfather had the same attitude Ralph has. Like my grandfather would be like, I'm going to tell myself, isn't this great? I like this. And then find the ways to figure it out and make it not just bearable, but livable while I'm doing it if I'm required to do it.
Right.
And that like mentality is like, holy cow, like that takes an incredible mind, an incredible spirit, and like such grit to like figure out like being like this, if this is what I got, what do I need to do?
Right. Yeah. Especially when increasingly like, you know, we're at that point now where we need more people to like advocate for a kind of life where people can work and not have to think this is torture. At the very least, I can support myself or my family with it too. And I think that's, you know, I think the ultimate thing you probably want people to come away with when you hear these stories too is understanding like the how connected we all are and how much we owe each other in this process. These people we interact with day to day in their various roles aren't just fucking NPCs in a fucking video game. Like everyone has their own life and is trying to go through it in the same way, and to not extend that respect or humility to them, it's just going to happen, you know, at our own detriment. So, I think it's encourage everybody to listen to the show because it's really fantastic.
Yeah. It's When You're Invisible on the Michael Tura Network, and it's very good. Go check it out. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great having you.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. It means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.